Hi, this is Brad Rao from bradraomusic.com, and today I'm going to talk about music theory. I'm not going to teach you music theory. This is not a music theory lesson directly. You're not going to get a better grade on your music theory test if you listen to this. But what I do want to talk about is how we got to this music theory thing. And the biases of it. I think this is almost should be called the music theory biased, first of all, when I say music theory, you assume that I mean music, there's music theory, and we call it music theory, but there's actually jazz theory. There was even Renaissance theories on writing music, which was, were different than the theories that we have today. If you think about it, I think everybody has their own theory on music. In fact, I think to say theory, I don't think is even a good term. I don't even think that people realize what the word theory means, and when they say music theory, and it is a subject that can be studied and can be learned, But it has some certain biases. First of all, we're talking about Western music theory. There's a lot of music that's been happening. There's a lot of ethnic music that we call it, like music from different countries. I had a teacher who was really into Turkish music, and we had a report where we did some music from Africa that we ended up listening to and trying to transcribe, which was very interesting and very challenging because they were just singing these weird rhythms, and we were trying to use this Western notation to. And I think the whole point was that you couldn't really do it. And we did a good job. I think everybody did a good job. We all got to hear each other's projects and see the various ways that we would solve an unsolvable problem as best as we could. And it really opened my eyes up to how wired I am to believing that music theory is true. And as opposed to what I would say is it is true within its own reference frame. So if we're talking, for example, depending on if you're speaking German and you say nine, or if you're speaking English and you say nine, it definitely depends on the context of the language you're speaking in, whether, what you're actually communicating. I think there are various I think that it's pretty obvious when you're using different language. So I think that, they say that language, music is a language, and I think that that's not untrue, but I think that what people actually mean without realizing it is that there is a language that people use to write music that has been established and written down and taught in books the same way for a couple hundred years. And that is a language, and we use that, and most people understand that language. When you, even as a kid, and the bad guy comes, and there's minor and diminished, and he wins, and the good guy wins, and there's a major chord and perfect fifths. An interesting thing is whether or not these are cultural or whether or not they're ingrained. I think that anybody would hear a perfect fifth and a tritone and agree that the tritone is more unsettling than the perfect fifth, and maybe you're looking for that unsettling tone in a blues, I don't think that they have a similar sound at all. But it's an interesting thing. So is it cultural or not? I don't know. How am I supposed to? But either way, whether or not this is culturally learned or a part of just being mankind or a universal natural truth, there's definitely certain things that are undoubtedly biased about the Western view of music that can be seen in comparing it to jazz theory in a subtle way, because I think that those languages are very similar. But if you especially, I think a very good way to do that is to compare it to the Indian tradition, the Indian music, the ragas, listening to tabla players, listening to the sitar, and the things that they have going on. And I think that's a great example because, number one, these systems are highly elaborate and absolutely just as well planned out and intricate as anything that Bach or Mozart is doing, undoubtedly. Even on the first listen, you can tell. And the more you get into that, the more you can appreciate these kinds of things. But none of that stuff is taught as music theory. When I go to the library and type in music theory, I don't find information on that. I find information on Bach and Mozart. And if you look at all of these people, really, they're from a single area, a very, very small location in, you know, the Italy and in Europe, and a lot of times centering in Italy, Florence, Copenhagen, this very single continent in a single place. And it's strange to think that, like, all of the great music is written there. That's where people wrote music. And apparently no one else has written any music that was even any way halfway decent in any other area the entire time. And that I find hard to believe, to be honest. There is the notion that maybe the music isn't being written down. Maybe there isn't in their face about it. Maybe these people are geniuses. And that there's something special about this area. There's also this self-fulfilling prophecy where if a town has a reputation for having intelligent people, if you're an intelligent person, you're going to go there. And that's going to increase the town's reputation for intelligent people, and then the artists, the philosophers, the musicians are going to flock to these areas. You know, the builders, the masons are all in this one central location, creating these advanced works of art, these alleged, and I think that there's no doubt of saying that these are advanced, some of the greatest achievements of mankind, but how come no one has ever written anything anywhere else? Is that because they're not writing it down? Is it because no one cared? And another thing, I mean, that I just have to say, like, certain cultures might be more dominating and wanting to take over things, with the force of their might, and that I think has a big influence. And I think that there's no single answer. So this music theory that we talk about is really the theory of one specific location at one specific time. And we still, to this day, call it music theory. And all of the other ideas that anyone else came up with in any other location on any other continent isn't music theory. And in fact, they're wrong. They're calling it the wrong thing. We have the right answers. And if they say it's something else, if they have a different name for the same thing, that's not correct. And that's kind of what ended up happening, I feel like. And even studying jazz theory, it's based on, loosely, but still on the classical theory. They notate it the same way. There's so much still rooted, like, even the way that we write music, there's a million ways of writing music, and we're discovering this now in the 20th century, and the classical tradition is just the one way that a couple got, that guys were doing it in a specific location. So that's the one thing that I want to talk about just the cultural bias that this idea has really dominated. And of course, in America, a lot of us came here from Europe, and we're bringing that European tradition with us, and we're doing our own thing with it too. And I think we've been trying. Musicians have been, a lot of them have been trying to shake it off ever since we got here. They've been trying to get away from the European notation and that, and to their own right. And the prestige and the, high class nature of these amazing artists that could only happen at this great location, I think there's a little bit of arrogance even with that too. Now, at the same time, I do think that there was a lot of intelligent people, and I do think that it was feeding off of each other. And the more, if you're in a location with a lot of gifted, talented musicians and artists being creative and philosophers all the time, you are definitely, you know, going. That's a breeding ground for new ideas and coming up with all kinds of great things too. But it seemed to be kind of a niche thing too. Which is why it ended up being so specific. Now, the actual bias of music theory, in terms of its practical uses, it has a major scale bias, which is interesting because the major scale wasn't even the first scale that was used. We had these other modes, Dorian, Hyperdorian. We talked about them in a different video. Dorian, Phrygian, Lydian, Mixolydian, and Aeolian were used first, and the Ionian mode, which is now we call the major scale, was a much later thing. It's a funny thing about the modes, because historians eventually thought that these mode names are actually based off of Greek city-states. The Doric and the Ionians were doing these things. Of course, there are different pillars that have the different, you know, Ionic, Doric and Corinthian style. There's no Corinthian mode, but there is an Ionian and Dorian mode, the Ionian being a happier sound and the Dorian being more of a minor sound. So the major scale wasn't even really a big thing for a while, and eventually it became the primary scale by the time that we get to Bach, slowly over into and a lot of the Renaissance had this major scale thing happening. But by the time we got to Bach, and really the Baroque era in general, this major and minor thing was really happening a lot, and it was kind of those were the two scales, where we had the happy scale, which was the primary key, and the minor scale, which was the lesser. If you think about even these words, major and minor, you know, majority and minority, we have a scale that is majorly important, and we have another scale that is just only a minor importance. And even these, you know, these names, so this major scale biased is really, and what I mean by that is that we name intervals out of all the scale possibilities, we name intervals based on the major scale. So if it's the first note of the major scale, I say 1. And if it's the second note of the major scale, I say 2. And then 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If I say 6, it's the sixth note of the major scale. If the note is altered, I say it's a flat 6. I would say that it's the major scale, except the 6 is, it's lowered from the major scale. But I'm still, even though I, you know, when I describe, even when I say a minor scale, I say 1, 2, flat 3, 4, 5, flat 6, flat 7, and 8 or 1 for the natural minor, I'm still using, I say a flat 3, as if the major was the correct way, and that the flat 3 is the wrong way to, you know, an alteration of the major scale, which is the fundamental unit. Now, of course, to have a music theory, you would need to have a fundamental scale. You would need to have a major scale, and it wouldn't doesn't even necessarily have to be our major scale, but it could be a scale that is of major importance and is used the majority of the time, and is so that we can have a standard on which to say, well, this would be this. And so because of music theory and because of this bias, we have a universal way of, at least through equal temperament music, being able to describe a musical event, where I can call someone on the phone and say I was playing a flat 6, and they would know exactly what I'm talking about, where I wouldn't really be able to do that. Or if there were different music theories, we wouldn't really be able to do that too. Now, a lot of people say that the major scale is the most pure scale. But I don't know, it's interesting because, first of all, if you look at, there's a scale called the Lydian dominant scale, which in our music theory, I would say 1, 2, 3, sharp 4, 5, 6, flat 7, 1. So it has the sharp 4 of Lydian and has the flat 7. That's actually at the overtone scale, where if you took all the harmonics that you could and stuck them within an octave, you would end up with that scale. You wouldn't end up with a major scale. So the overtone series is not really giving us a major scale. Another way to think about it is if we just move up in fifths. So for example, if I were to start on F, and I would have I would take F and then C and then D, and I would put all of those notes together up until I got to B, I would end up with a Lydian scale. So in that case, if we build a scale purely on the mathematical fifth, we don't end up with major, we end up with Lydian. In jazz theory, Lydian is a great scale because it is said that it has no tendency tones, and the major scale has tendency tones. And I think the tendency tones is actually one of the really interesting things about the major scale that highlights it. A tendency tone means that a note tends to go to another note. Doesn't mean that it has to, but it tends to go to there. And the example is the 7 going to the octave, T going to Do, Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do. And the other one is which is less common, and even to this day, kind of, we've already evolved past it, I think. It is the 4 going to 3. In the Renaissance, a 4 wasn't a dissonance. In classical, it's a dissonance. Now, today, it's kind of just not anymore. The 4 needing to go to 3 and the 7 going to 1 go to 1. And in fact, in a dominant 7th chord, we have both of those motions happening simultaneously. So the major scale gives us a sense of direction and disbalance. It has a nice combination of balance and disbalance. It has a lot of harmonious notes, but it also has the major 7 and not a lowered 7th, which is from the harmonic series. It's an interesting choice. The harmonic series might make a little bit more sense. It's curious that they ended up not doing that. Of course, there is the Lydian jazz method, the Lydian chromatic method, which actually uses the Lydian scale as the foundational one. And I think they talk about that when you build a scale in fifths, you end up with Lydian. And because Lydian has no tendency tones and can work over a major chord, that's actually a good place to start. And then by incorporating dissonant notes in various degrees, you can control how much tension you have within. You might play a scale that has a note instead of Lydian. It might be Lydian but with a flat 6, which creates tension, and when you go back up you raise the 6 and you resolve the tension. And there are various ways where Lydian is actually the foundational thing, and I think that actually that's a pretty clever approach, and I think that that might actually make more sense overall. But unfortunately, fortunately or unfortunately, or what, maybe it doesn't even matter at all, but we have this major scale, which we're using primarily, where we have the first note, the fundamental, the second note, which is usually picked like that, except a flat second gives us a really disturbing, more of a darker, somber sound, used a lot in flamenco and in Egyptian sounding music, and foreign Eastern music, with that augmented second kind of sound. Very interesting. There was a big thing in classical music to really, not to use major, not to use augmented seconds. And I think that's just because they didn't want to sound ethnic. I think that there was a lot of music going on that they wanted to distinguish themselves from. And, a lot of their rules, isolation really comes up, can having a bunch of minds getting together kind of and trying to isolate away from like other cultures by not ever using augmented seconds, which is, we think of typically anytime you see a desert scene, you hear an augmented second in a movie. And I think that also because of that difference too, we can have that cultural distinction. If Bach was using augmented seconds, we wouldn't be able to, you would think of Bach when you heard that, maybe. instead. And that's one of the amazing powers of music, is that it can take you to different places. And not only places, it can take you to different times, it can take you to different locations on Earth, it can take you to different places within yourself, it can take you to different emotional states, different places within your mind. And it's really, you know, an amazing way of communicating something on a very deep level. So this major scale sort of biased, and you know, I have some nieces and nephews, and when all their toys have all major scales, all the songs that we teach our kids are the major scale, and that's normal, isn't it? That's the normal thing to do. That's what everybody does, and that's what Although if you grew up in a flamenco community, you would be singing very different songs. If in a different culture, I think that, you know, that major biased is a very bizarre thing. And honestly, a lot of the people who are really into the music theory, you know, and heavily into it, are really trying to get away from the major scale. A lot, you know, people who play in major scale a lot, you know, some of them will definitely indulge in it on purpose, but a lot of people who play in major almost do it accidentally, without even realizing it. And they're going through the possibilities that they think they would like. And they end up doing what most music theory people would say to do anyway. But they're doing it by realizing it and knowing it, where a music theory book would say, don't do that. And you would go, okay, and maybe it does work. And if you've listened to my history video, you would realize that eventually it will. And if it doesn't work now, that's because the time isn't right. And if it's going to work eventually, you know, when we're ready, that might be the way that everyone does everything eventually. So I don't think that this major scale bias is going to change much. There is something called set theory, which really makes a lot of sense. And I've had a lot of teachers not want to get into that or take that seriously. But that actually, set theory is basically where you just have you have six numbers. Because essentially there's really six intervals, even though there's 12 notes, because after a tritone you have the fourth, which is an inversion of a fifth, and so on, which gives you six different possibilities. And I think that set theory makes, and so the numbers are actually weird. A very easy way to know set theory is whatever fret you are on is what the number is. That's kind of a way. I'm not doing a great job of explaining set theory. You'll have to do some research, but it's actually based on like the numbers. So for example, like a perfect fifth would be called seven. And I remember that because I know a perfect fifth is on the seventh fret of the guitar. So I never really had a big issue with this, looking at music in terms of set theory, which is really, when you look at it from a different model, I think that the big thing that you learn is not necessarily, you know, it seems arbitrary because, of course, you're just describing something in set theory now. But I think that by using a different model, you really get a new perspective, because there's some things that would be more natural and obvious in set theory, and there are other things that you may not ever realize that would happen in set theory. You know, that's something, and I don't think set theory really stuck to this day. People really still talk about music in terms of the major scale, even like most, and again, a lot of the people who are proponing this are not even really playing major scale that much. They're really interested in kind of getting out of it. So I think that it's a bizarre tradition, and, you know, eventually maybe the major scale will make its way out of music altogether. Who knows what will replace it? And interesting enough too, you know, Lydian is really one of the rarely used mode, and it's you don't hear, I've never heard really a lot of pop songs. Elliott Smith every now and then will throw it in, but you don't really hear a lot of that kind of stuff. And this Lydian dominant scale is really just a weird jazz sound and scale that if you play it, you definitely invoke like a jazz sound, just even the scale itself, even no matter what you do with it. So that's a really interesting thing, that even though the Lydian dominant is actually literally the overtone scale, and the Lydian scale is actually the scale built on the perfect fifths, which would be like a temperament scale, like a Pythagorean, or I don't think the Pythagorean was based on fifths, but something similar to that. The way they used to tune pianos was by tuning them all up going through fifths. So I think that, it's interesting that Lydian isn't, if you actually move through the circle of fifths, Lydian actually is really the start, and then it goes all the way through Locrian. So it's interesting that it doesn't, that Lydian wasn't the primary scale, and that somehow that the scale, what it is about that. And again, the idea that the major scale is happy, and the minor scale is sad. That's something that I've heard could be culturally learned too, where like a lot of people, like the more that actors would use that. I have found that I've heard people say like that they didn't have that major minor biased as much in the music of Bach. And I think that that's sort of true. But if you look at what keys Bach would use going through when he does like the St. Matthew's Passion, or going through the story of Jesus, there are definitely the minor parts are during the sad parts, and the major parts are during the happy parts. The death is in minor and the resurrection is in major, so there is that kind of thing, and it's you'll never get out of your own culture to really know. But it's really interesting question, to think about this. And are we so wired to believe that major is the happy thing? And like the other thing is like that you should be happy. The goal in life is to be happy and not to be sad. And the major scale is the basis on that. And maybe the major scale is like the lesson for life, lining up your seven notes. And not trying to have anything flat or sharp. and that's an interesting thought, too. But now I'm kind of digressing. So anyway, so I think that I covered the, talking about music theory and the various biases and the possibilities for a lot of looking at music in so many different ways, getting outside of even the 12-note system. And why we still, and the interesting fact that we still use the major scale as the basis of what we call everything. And I think that's an interesting thing that we maybe don't even realize we're doing. So I hope you enjoyed this, and thanks for listening.